History isn't just a bunch of names and dates and facts. It's the collection of all the stories throughout human history that explain how and why we got here. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, where we look at the forgotten, neglected, strange, and even counterfactual stories that made our world what it is. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Welcome back to our series, Forging a President, looking at the years that Teddy Roosevelt spent in the Dakota Territories. We're jumping to the year 1885, and we're going to look at Roosevelt as a newly minted cowboy. Roosevelt found the site for his new ranch after a tip from a ranchman sent him north. He slashed across the Little Missouri River and found the spot on the opposite shore. He was driven once again in a search for solitude. The man who reads and writes must have space, and this was the spot. Roosevelt's view from an imagined veranda would be magnificent. He later wrote, "A range of clay hills, which seemed to have been sculpted by a giant hand as preparatory studies for mountains, loomed steeply into the sky. A distant plume of lignite smoke, glowing pink as evening came on, hinted at the surrounding savagery of the Badlands." It was to be Roosevelt Ranch headquarters, complete with a rocker where a man could contemplate all that was his while reading great works or while writing. But he needed men to build the place, so he turned to the two men with whom he had adventured in Maine after the death of his father, Bill Sewell and Wilmot Dow. Roosevelt paid $400 for the rights to the land and then enticed the two men to come join him. "I feel sure you will do well for yourself by coming out with me." Why did Sewell and Dow agree to go? The reason was simple. Roosevelt was paying. Sewell later recalled, he said he would guarantee us a share of anything made in the cattle business. And if anything was lost, he would lose it and pay our wages. I told him I thought that was very one-sided, but he thought he could stand it. But if he thought that he could stand it, then we could too. Roosevelt went further than that. He wrote checks to cover existing mortgages and personally assured the men's wives all would be fine in a year or two. Such was the power of money at a time when banks didn't lend freely and companies didn't pay for people to move anywhere. Would someone today pick up and move to an unsettled area in the West for such an opportunity? Perhaps some would, but most wouldn't. But the difference was in the psychology of the late 19th century. Without a corporate state to fall back on, working-class citizens were quite used to making it up as they went along. The psychology of trying and failing was very real. The country depended on entrepreneurs to build it up. So when a potential employer guaranteed a living and took care of existing debts to boot, well, what was the downside? On his way back from Maine, Roosevelt was interviewed by a reporter for the Pioneer in Mandan while the train changed engines. "Theodore Roosevelt, the New York reformer, was on the westbound train yesterday, en route to his ranch near Little Missouri. He was feeling at his best, dressed in the careless style of the country gentleman of leisure, and spoke freely of his pleasant Dakota experience. Mr. Roosevelt believes that the young men of our country should assume a spirit of independence in politics," it wrote. To the papers, Roosevelt was a man enjoying his time out west. In reality, he was a man who had left one world for another, and his independence in politics had closed the door behind him for the present. When Dow and Sewell arrived in the Badlands in August 1884, Roosevelt asked Sewell what he thought of the country on his first night. The woodsman from Maine, who was nearing 40 with powerful shoulders, stared at the desolation of the Badlands. "I like it well enough," said Sewell, "but I don't believe it's much of a cattle country." "You don't know anything about it," Roosevelt replied. "Everyone says that." Sewell shrugged. "It's the way it looks to me. It's not much of a cattle country," he said. Roosevelt didn't listen. He would soon be taking in a delivery of 1,000 more cattle. Besides, they were loggers from Maine. What did they know about the Badlands and raising cattle? Sewell wrote his family his impression of the Badlands. "It's a dirty country and very dirty people on an average, but I think it is healthy. The soil is sand or clay, all dust or all mud. The river is the meanest apology for a frog pond that I ever saw. It is a queer country. You would like to see it, but you would not like to live here long. His is a good place for a man with plenty of money to make more, but if I had enough money to start here, I never would come. I think the country ought to have been left to the animals that had laid their bones here." Roosevelt sent the two Maine men down to his new site to build his ranch house and learn about cattle with 100 head. Merrifield, of course, was none too happy to see the men from Maine had moved in on his territory, but Roosevelt mollified him by telling him they would go on a hunting trip in Bighorn Country or Wyoming to find a grizzly. He wrote his sister, "You'll probably not hear from me for a couple months. If our horses give out or run away, or we get caught in the snow, we may be out much longer, till towards Christmas. He wanted to leave in a couple of weeks, but they needed more horses for the journey. Roosevelt was still setting up his life, creating something out of the Badlands that would give him purpose. He kept busy with building ranch and buying cattle and hiring men. More than that, he explored this new alien world's long rides in the saddle. On one of these rides, he and Sewell came across a couple of sun-bleached elk skulls with horns locked together. Roosevelt saw it as a battle to the death and took the name Elkhorn for his ranch. There was a hunting shack already on the property that Roosevelt would use until the big ranch house was finished. He wrote his sister Mamie about the long rides he took during those days, a solitary rider looking for something in the harsh, unforgiving landscape. He wrote, "I grow very fond of this place, and it certainly has a desolate, grim beauty of its own that has a curious fascination for me. The grassy, scantily wooded bottoms, through which the winding river flows, are bound by bare, jagged buttes. Their fantastic shapes and sharp, steep edges throw the most curious shadows under the cloudless, glaring sky. And at evening, I love to sit out in front of the hut and see their hard, gray outlines gradually grow soft. While my days I spend generally alone, riding through the lonely rolling prairie and broken lands." During these days, when Roosevelt divided his time between Sewell and Dow and Merrifield and Ferris, making sure all was going to plan, he found himself in a state of transformation and wrote to his sister again. "I now look like a regular cowboy dandy, with all my equipments finished in the most expensive style." He was speaking, of course, about his buckskin tunic and his broad sombrero, which now was accompanied by a fringe buckskin shirt, boots, chaparreros, and silver spurs. Movies had not come along yet, but Theodore Roosevelt could have certainly played the part of the newly minted cowboy. It was on one of his long solitary rides out in the Badlands that a famous confrontation took place. Roosevelt often went looking for stray horses, and on one ride he had gone far out on the prairie and night fell. The stars appeared like silver pepper over the lone rider, with the moon a crescent over the far buttes. The cool night air made the town of Mingusville stand out sharply in the distance. The town consisted of a railroad station and a hotel with a false front, really no more than a saloon. Roosevelt paused and stared at the yellow lights of the clustered buildings, then turned his horse toward the town. He was headed for a showdown with a Wild West bad man. Little Missouri was rated as one of the wildest towns on the Northern Pacific Line, and to a large extent the Badlands itself was a thieves' paradise. They were here, there, and everywhere, sinister, intangible shadows weaving in and out of the bright-colored fabric of frontier life. They were in every saloon and in almost every ranch house. They rode on the roundups, they sat around the campfire with the cowpunchers, he wrote. Out in the West, there was really no law, and men took advantage of the fact. The Badlands was the escape valve that allowed them to blow off steam. The gunplay was common, with many taking pot shots at the railroad cars passing through, some shooting through the cars, some even shooting through the bottom of the train cars. Shooting up the town was a standard entertainment on many nights when young cowboys came in to get oiled, as it was called, and then bullets would go flying from the saloons. Roosevelt later told of a cowboy in Medora who, quote, "spurred his horse up the steps of a rickety hotel piazza into the barroom, where he began firing at the clock, the decanters, etc., the bartender meanwhile taking one shot at him, which missed. When he had emptied his revolver, he threw down a roll of banknotes on the counter to pay for the damage he had done and galloped his horse out through the door," unquote. As Herman Hagedorn writes in Roosevelt and the Badlands, Western Dakota was a sanctuary, and from every direction of the compass, knaves of varying degrees of iniquity and misguided ability came to enjoy it. There was no law in the Badlands but six-shooter law. The days were reasonably ordered, for there were jobs for everyone, but the nights were wild. Butchers and cowboys, carpenters and laborers, adventurous young college graduates and young sons of English noblemen drank and gambled and shouted and shot up the town together with horse rustlers and bad men with notches in their guns. Roosevelt related another story of two men who slinked around town, each trying to get the drop on each other. He wrote, "Alas, one of the partners got a chance at his opponent as the latter was walking into a gambling hell and broke his back near the hips. Yet the crippled, mortally wounded man twisted around as he fell and shot his slayer dead. The victor did not live 20 minutes. It was almost inevitable that this dude from the East, this newly dressed buckskin cowboy with the thick glasses, would bang up against one of these so-called bad men. As he entered the town, two shots rang out from the inside of the Nolan Hotel. Here, the myth of the Wild West was playing out yet again, but Roosevelt was tired and wanted to sleep. Instead of passing on, he tied up his horse and walked in. A drunken man with two drawn guns wheeled around and turned on him. "Four eyes," he bellowed. Roosevelt stared at the wild-eyed man facing the tenderfoot with the buckskin coat and glasses. Nervous laughter erupted for some sheepherders nearby, and Teddy noticed the clock over the bar was pocked with bullet holes. "Four eyes is going to treat," the man shouted, waving his guns in the air. Roosevelt walked slowly and sat down in a chair behind the warm wood stove. The air was smoky and smelled of horses, sweat, and gunpowder. The man followed him, shouting profanities, waving his gun over him. "Four eyes is going to treat," he shouts again. Roosevelt was silent, but he knew that he would have to stand up to this gunman. The man was not going to leave him alone. He was too delicious a target for the drunken cowboy, a well-to-do dude out on the lark. Roosevelt later gave his own account of events. He wrote, "I heard one or two shots in the barroom as I came up, and I disliked going in. But there was nowhere else to go, and it was a cold night. Inside the room were several men, who, including the bartender, were wearing the kind of smile worn by men who are making to believe to like what they don't like. A shabby individual in a broad hat with a cocked gun in each hand was walking up and down the floor, talking with strident profanity. He had evidently been shooting at the clock, which had two or three holes in its face. As soon as he saw me, he hailed me as Four Eyes, in reference to my spectacles, and said, 'Four Eyes is going to treat.'" Perhaps in this moment, Roosevelt recalled his time as a boy at Moosehead Lake, when he found himself the victim of two bullies who teased him mercilessly, as he said, and then beat him up when he tried to fight them. This well-dressed cowboy with glasses was the classic bully's victim. No doubt many such had come to the West and adopted the garb, but not the code, only to find themselves humiliated by men with nothing to lose. Roosevelt continued in his account. "I joined in the laugh and got behind the stove and sat down, thinking to escape notice. He followed me, however, and though I tried to pass it off as a jest, this merely made him more offensive, and he stood leaning over me, a gun in each hand, using very foul language.